Chapter 6 Coronet, Corellia. Wearing only shorts and a blue undershirt bearing the symbol of the original Rebel Alliance in black, now fading to gray, Wedge Antilles moved to the front door of his quarters and activated the security panel on the wall beside it. The screen flickered to life and showed a man and a woman standing in the hall outside. Both were young, in their mid-twenties, and despite the fact that they were in the gray jumpsuits and overcoats that constituted one form of anonymous street dress on Corellia, their haircuts, military short rather than slightly shaggy, and an indefinable quality about their body language and facial expressions, marked them as outsiders. They shouldn't have been able to reach the front door of Wedge's quarters without him knowing about it. His housing building was given over to military retirees such as himself. Some were retired from the New Republic, some from CORSEC, Corellian Security, some from other Corellian armed forces. There were very basic security measures in place at all the entrances into the housing complex, so if these two were here without having been announced by complex security, it was because some other resident had let them in. Wedge shrugged. The complex's security was designed to keep ordinary folk out of their building, not to prevent agents with contacts from getting in. He glanced over his shoulder. His wife, Iella, stood in the doorway to their bedroom. She wore a simple white robe, and her hair, normally a wavy gray-brown cascade, was a tousled mess, including one tuft protruding almost straight up. She had one hand cupped over her mouth as she yawned. The other held a full-sized blaster pistol at her side. Yawn done, she gave him a questioning look, one eyebrow raised. He shrugged, then turned back to the door and activated the exterior speakers.
"What is it?"
The female visitor, a well-muscled blonde woman who looked to be at least as tall as Wedge, not that this was unusual, as Wedge stood slightly shorter than the average human male, said,
"General Wedge Antilles?"
"He moved," Wedge said. "I think he's over in Zed Block. He left the carpets a mess, too."
It was a test, of course. If the visitors showed confusion or retreated, then they were simply admirers or children of colleagues, people who could stand to contact him through ordinary channels and during daylight hours. If they didn't, they didn't. The male visitor, a broad-shouldered, dark-haired man who looked as though he'd probably represented his military unit as wrestling champion, merely smiled. The woman continued,
"I'm sorry for the late visit, General, but we really need to speak to you."
Wedge flipped on the living room lights and looked back over his shoulder again. The door was open, but Iella was no longer in sight. She'd be hanging back in the darkness, wearing something far less visible than the white robe, the blaster in hand, just in case. Wedge flipped another switch on the security panel. Now the door leading into the side hall would be sealed, preventing Wedge and Iella's youngest daughter, Miri, from wandering into the living room if she awoke. An intelligent and stubborn girl, Miri had inherited her mother's inquisitive nature. It would not be beyond her to try to eavesdrop on a late-night conversation if she was aware one was taking place. Finally, Wedge pressed the switch to open the front door. It slid down and out of sight, revealing the two visitors. The two straightened, an ordinary at-attention courtesy for a retired general, but they couldn't quite keep dubious expressions from their faces. He knew they were looking at a skinny, graying man with knobby knees, a man wearing a sentimental value undershirt older than either of them. It was a vision that did not match his reputation. Wedge kept any annoyance out of his voice.
"Come in."
"Thank you,"
the woman said. The two moved in, and Wedge tripped the door just as soon as they cleared the threshold. The door tugged at the man's shirt cloth as it rose into place.
"I apologize for waking you," the woman said. "I'm Captain Barthas with Intelligence Section. This is my associate, Lieutenant Titch.
Identification? Wedge said.
Both reached into inner pockets of their coats.
Wedge willed himself not to tense, but their hands emerged with identicards. Wedge held out a hand, not to take the identification, which by regulation these two would not have yielded in any case, but so that a green scanning light from the security panel would fall across his palm.
Captain Barthas waved her card across his hand, and Lieutenant Titch followed suit. Now Wedge's computerized security gear would be processing their card information, comparing it with Corellian data sources and a few databases that Wedge was not officially supposed to be able to access. He waved the visitors toward the cream-colored stuffed furniture that lined one wall of the room.
"Have a seat."
Captain Barthas gave him a little shake of the head. "Actually, we've been sitting for hours on a shuttle."
"Of course."
Wedge waited.
"The Galactic Alliance needs your help, General,"
the woman said.
Wedge offered a faint snort.
"Captain, the Galactic Alliance is teeming with officers who were compelled to retire after the war with the Yuuzhan Vong, for the simple reason that a peacetime military doesn't need as many of them. Some of these folks are quite brilliant, and unlike me, they're anxious to get back into uniform. Me? I'm anxious to sit around in comfortable clothes all day, give my wife all the time my military career wouldn't allow me to give her, and complete my memoirs. You're looking for the wrong man."
"No, sir."
Captain Barthas shook her head in vigorous denial.
"The GA needs you and your specific help."
The male visitor finally spoke, his voice softer than Wedge would have suspected.
"It has to do with the events of nearly 30 years ago, when Rogue Squadron did so much work preparing for the taking of Coruscant from Imperial forces."
"I see. And it's something that requires my presence, instead of a simple holocom call?"
"Yes, sir,"
Captain Barthas said.
"And if you're here in the middle of the night, it's because you need me in the middle of the night."
The captain nodded, the expression on her face regretful. Wedge flipped a switch on the door side panel, and the entryway opened again.
"Wait for me in the building lobby. I'll be down directly."
Now, finally, the two of them glanced at each other. Barthas said,
"We'd prefer to remain here, sir."
Wedge gave her a frosty little smile.
"And will you be making a holocam recording of my goodbyes with my family? Or perhaps you'd prefer to hug my daughter for me?"
Barthas cleared her throat, thought better of it, and moved out into the hall. Titch followed. Wedge shut the door behind them. Iella moved into the bedroom doorway again. She was now wearing a green-black rain drape. She looked annoyed.
"What do they need that they couldn't have asked you decades ago?"
Wedge shrugged.
"Retired is such an imprecise word." "Did they check out?"
Iella nodded.
"They're the genuine article. In fact, I worked for a year with Barthas's father. The family is Corellian."
She moved up to put her arms around Wedge's neck.
"Sometimes I wish you hadn't been as influential as you were in your job, so that they'd stop coming for you any time the military discovers it's forgotten how to coordinate an X-Wing engagement."
Wedge wrapped his arms around her waist and pulled her to him.
"And who was it they came for last time? An hour before dawn, sweeping the hallway for listening devices before they even rang the chimes?"
"Well, me."
Iella had spent her professional career as a security officer, first for CORSEC and then for New Republic Intelligence, and the demands on her post-retirement time matched the demands on Wedge's. Wedge kissed her.
"Wake up, Miri, so I can say goodbye. I'll grab my go-bag and get dressed."
She reached past him to unlock the hallway, then turned toward that door.
Not looking back, she said,
I don't like Titch.
Yeah. It was a bit of verbal shorthand. She didn't mean she didn't like the man. She didn't know him. But Titch was the sort of intelligence officer brought along to ensure security, to ensure that the person being transported didn't cause trouble. It led to the question, was Titch actually Barthas's regular partner, or had he been brought in because someone anticipated Wedge causing trouble? Coruscant. Han and Leia crowded in close, side by side, so that the holocam on the terminal before them could capture both their images.
Luke, Han said.
The lights on the terminal flickered, and after a few seconds, the face of Luke Skywalker swam into view on the terminal screen. He was wearing a cold-weather wrap in black with jagged decorative lines on it in subdued gray, and behind him was an anonymous white wall. He looked surprised to see the caller. Hello.
We were wondering, Leia said, if you were planning on seeing any X-Wing action in the near future.
Her tone was light and conversational. For the merest instant, Luke looked startled, but his features settled into an amused grin.
Why do you ask?
Well, we're planning on a vacation, Han said, in the Falcon, dashing around, seeing old friends. Me, Leia, Goldilocks, the Nogri. Do you see what I'm getting at, conversationally?
Luke's grin broadened.
I think so.
Leia and I can talk. The Nogri can keep each other occupied. But if C-3PO doesn't have R2-D2 to talk to, he'll talk to us.
Han mimed putting a blaster barrel to his own temple and pulling the trigger.
Save me, Luke Skywalker. You're my only hope.
Still cheerful, Luke shook his head.
I wish I could. But Mara and I are about to do a quick training tour with a bunch of Jedi Knights anxious to learn about adapting their force-based abilities to X-Wing piloting tasks. In other words, I'm about to head out with R2.
Oh.
Han gave his brother-in-law an unhappy stare.
All right, then. Doom me to day after day of listening to dithering obsequiousness.
Nice word choice, Luke said. By the way, where will you be heading on your vacation?
Leia shrugged.
We're not sure yet. We may visit Lando and Tendra and get a tour of their new manufacturing complex, but don't tell them, since we want it to be a surprise if it happens. We're thinking hard about a trip through the Alderaan system and then planet-hopping along the Perlemian trade route.
Lots of shopping,
Han offered, his tone suggesting that such a fate was only one step above death as a matter of preference.
Ah, good. Have fun. And sorry I couldn't help with R2.
That's the way it is sometimes, Han said.
The polite smile remained fixed on his face after Luke reached forward to break the comm connection. But Han's posture failed him. He sagged into his chair as if beaten.
He's part of it, Han said.
We can't be sure.
Don't try to kid me, Leia. He was wearing a weather wrap indoors. Either he just got out of the fresher, and his hair was dry, you'll note, or he threw it on to cover over something else he was wearing, like a pilot's uniform. You saw the wall behind him? White, curved. A bulkhead on a vessel. He's already shipped out.
Finally, Leia nodded, reluctant.
Probably.
He's on their side.
As the master of the Jedi Order, he has taken oaths to support the Galactic Alliance.
Leia let a little sternness creep into her voice.
And don't pretend this is a simple situation, where everyone on one side is smart and sensible, and everyone on the other side isn't. It's more complicated than that. It's more complicated than that for me.
Han reached over to hold her for a moment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just like he hit me when I wasn't looking. He buried his face in her hair, took a deep breath. All right. It's time for us to go. In the foremost passenger seat, Wedge sat up startled as his shuttle came in for its landing, and a familiar-looking Corellian YT-1300 leapt up past his viewport, headed for the skies.
That, he announced, was the Millennium Falcon.
If you say so, sir.
Across the aisle between seats, Captain Barthas looked dubious.
There are thousands of those old Corellian transports still flying, though.
Oh, that was definitely the Falcon. I'm intimately familiar with her lines, and her rust spots. I had to replicate them once on a decoy vehicle decades ago. No matter what Han does, paint the hull, anodize it, those rust patches come back after a few months or years.
Barthas cocked her head, whatever you say, gesture, that left no doubt in Wedge's mind that she was humoring him, and returned her attention to her data pad. Half an hour later, the two of them, Titch and a droid porter, swept into the government facility Barthas had said would be Wedge's home for the next several days at least. It was deep within a gray pyramidal building at the edge of what had once been the Imperial Government District. The dark corridor from the turbo lifts led into a large outer office laid out in rows of monitoring stations. Most of the stations were empty, their view screens unlit, but Wedge could see two that were active, both showing holocam views of long rooms with dormitory-style accommodations for four at one end and office equipment at the other. Barthas led Wedge and the others to a door, which whooshed upward and thumped into place with the speed, air displacement, and echoing sound of an armored portal. The chamber's overhead lights flickered on as they entered, revealing a room very much like those shown on the monitors. Closest to the door were four desks, facing one another, laden with computer material. The far side of the room held four bunk beds and oversized equipment lockers. Wedge could also see a door that he presumed led into a refresher. The porter droid moved in to drop Wedge's bags on the nearest of the bunk beds. Barthas and Titch stayed near the door and gestured at the accommodations.
A bit plain, Barthas admitted. I'm sorry.
They're luxurious compared with some of the places I've been quartered.
Wedge glanced over the computer equipment, noting brand names and designs.
These terminals have to be 30 years old.
Barthas nodded.
Almost. This facility was installed by Intelligence just after the New Republic conquered Coruscant and drove Isan Isard into exile. The equipment is original, but it has been serviced and upgraded.
What's the facility for?
It was what we called a pressure cooker, Titch said. The idea is that in times of crisis, you get teams of civilian coders, technicians, and specialists together in combined living and work quarters. They're the sort of people who are going to be working 16-20 hours a day anyway. More convenient for them to be packed in together, exchanging ideas, keeping one another's spirits up and so forth, rather than in separate offices and with quarters minutes or hours travel time away.
Ah.
Wedge grabbed the rolling chair before the nearest desk, swung it around, and sat.
So, you wouldn't tell me on Corellia. You wouldn't tell me on the shuttle trip. Now, in the heart of your own secure facility, maybe you can tell me what this is all about. What am I supposed to be doing?
Barthas and Titch exchanged a look. Their faces remained impassive, but Wedge read it as a here-we-go exchange. Barthas returned her attention to Wedge.
Just, waiting, General.
Wedge blinked.
Waiting for orders?
No.
Barthas looked regretful and waved for the porter droid to leave the chamber, which it did. Wedge noticed that, though his posture looked relaxed, Titch was ready for action, and had positioned himself in the doorway so that he could draw the blaster at his hip and fire without endangering Barthas.
No,
Barthas continued,
You have no orders. Our orders are to keep you as comfortable as possible during your stay here.
Wedge refused to allow the alarm that was beginning to well up within him to show on his face.
The duration of my stay?
Barthes shrugged.
Unknown.
Its purpose?
Can't say.
Wedge closed his eyes and offered up a slow, silent sigh. Then he looked at the two of them again.
I said no, you know.
They looked confused.
When officers of the Corellian military came to me and said there could be trouble between us and the GA, I said, sorry, fellows, I'm retired. You can get advice as useful as mine and much more up-to-date by looking at other Corellian officers. And so they left me alone. Why didn't you?
Barthes opened her mouth, evidently realized that she could offer no answer without somehow compromising her orders, and closed it again.
Because, you see,
and this time Wedge couldn't quite keep the pain he was feeling from being reflected in his voice, as a hoarseness he could not control.
You see, that way I'd be with my family if something happened. And now, someone, somewhere, at the GA end of things, has decided I need to be out of the way for what's going to happen, and has separated me from my family.
He fixed Barthes and Titch with his stare. Barthes actually leaned back. She shook her head.
I'm sorry,
she said, not an admission that she or her team was doing what Wedge was speculating, but her voice carried emotion, and it sounded genuine. She turned away and walked into the outer office. Titch seemed unaffected. You approach this door any time it's open, it closes, he says, meaning it won't do you any good to make a sudden dash for the door when we bring you food or drink. Besides, if you do make an attempt to escape, I get to kill you. He patted the blaster pistol at his side. This model can be set to stun or burn. I always leave it on burn. He nodded as though he thought the gravity of that action would impress Wedge. He also glanced after his partner, apparently making sure she was out of earshot. He turned back to Wedge.
Let me add this, he said. I'm sick of hearing the Rebel Alliance generation brag about how they stomped the Empire and then whine about how the galaxy owes them a living or special favors. The Empire would have kicked the Yuuzhan Vong in the teeth, and I wouldn't have lost almost everyone I knew when I was a kid if you hadn't won. Well, the higher-ups seem to think they owe you a little dignity, so here it is. Eat your meals, get in some quiet exercise, keep your mouth shut, and when all the shouting's done, you can go home and finish your self-serving memoirs about how you single-handedly won half a dozen wars. That's the deal. Got it?
Wedge studied him.
If you'd been a little smarter, I might have left you some shred of a career when I leave here. But I won't. You'll be cleaning refreshers for the rest of your life.
Titch snorted, unimpressed. He backed out of the doorway, and the door slid shut.